Rather than it being a solo recital all the way through, I've invited a few guests to join me on several numbers. It'll be about 45 minutes of music, something like that. And since the last weekend was the observance of the 4th of July, I thought I should start with several Americana pieces of the past. So I'm going to begin with three short marches, actually two marches and a little dance, which come from the era of George Washington, beginning with the President's March by Philip Fyle. You all know him so well. And that would be 1793. And then Washington's March at the Battle of Trenton. And then after that, a little, a sort of a little sachet number. And I was reading all these words about George Washington in here. And this third number, which is in a little piece of country dances, it says about this piece, when the French army arrived at Rhode Island, the continental drums were thrown somewhat in the background by the more showy band of the French force. On Washington's visit to Newport, 1781, to confer with the French commander, the French officers arranged a ball in his honor. They decorated the ballroom with flags, swords, drums, streamers, and all the fanciful color that the army possessed. And they asked George Washington to dance the first dance. He danced with Miss Margaret Champlin, one of the reigning belles of Newport. And as the signal was given, the French officers took the instruments from the hands of the musicians and flourished the opening strains of the little piece that I will play. They also go on in great detail, which I shall not do, to say that that George Washington, we think of him only as an army guy, loved to go to the theater, also said he did not claim to have a singing voice himself, but loved to hear opera. So we hear the President's March, Washington's March at the Battle of Trenton, and the little gavotte called Successful Campaign.
Thank you.
popular from various composers is to write a set of variations on a theme as they would think certain composers might accept it had they even known the theme to begin with. And one of those, I love these covers. So I haven't brought this up before, but this year, Daniel Gregory Mason, who was a relative of Lowell Mason, and this was a set of variations that he did in the style of composers that obviously he had known. I'm not going to do all of them, but I will do four. First, I'll play the theme to make sure we all know what it is, and you may sing along, of course. And then the four variations I'll do, how would it have been set by Grieg, by Tchaikovsky, by Brahms, and by Dvorak? There aren't any later because he didn't live any longer than that. So we begin. These are the variations on Yankee Doodle by Daniel Gregory Mason. was very pleased to find out that we had two wonderfully talented woodwind players working in the kitchen. And having found that out, it seemed to me that they ought to be brought into play. And so tonight we do a piece that is for piano and flute and oboe. And so we have Anna Rohde on flute and Martha Schwein. On oboe. We're going to play the first movement of a trio written by American composer Madeline Dring. In the early days of symphonies, I'm speaking about now in the 1800s, people, of course, wanted to hear the music, but there weren't that many symphony orchestras around, and so there was really not any way for them to often hear this music. I'm talking about things like, say, Mozart symphonies, and then later Brahms symphonies, Tchaikovsky symphonies. And so the way that they became very popular was that arrangements were made for piano, four hands. And that way people could come into someone's home and hear a complete Brahms symphony that had been reduced to be able to be played on a piano, two players. And that became a very, very common thing. I have at home, oh, I don't know, not more than about 300 pieces of piano forehand music. I mean, there's just tons of it that's out there. And it was done for a number of reasons. The most important was what I just talked about for people for hearing. But also, for instance, things that wanted to become dance pieces. They couldn't hire the orchestra for all the rehearsals for the dancers. What they did instead was do piano forehands. Like, for instance, the Stravinsky Rite of Spring is available for piano forehands. And a number of dance pieces of that era. Now, beyond that, of course, then also became the kind of parlor entertainment. If you can have piano forehands, why not piano six hands? It made great sense. And so this evening, I think this may be a first at Holden, though I'm not sure, that we will do a piece for piano six hands, a chance for you to hear the Schubert March Militaire, which Christine Geary and Marlene Heuvel are going to join me. And so, ladies, if you would, please. And the question, of course, becomes, and how do you all sit on the bench? And that question is answered very simply. Thank you. It's just your back that gets you after a while, leaning over like that. But I suppose, you know, you could just add a chair or something, but it just seemed appropriate to just kind of gather in. The most I've seen is one piece for piano, eight hands. But we didn't do that one. This is a little piece by a dear friend of mine, Egil Hovland, a Norwegian composer, now quite elderly in a nursing home, but he was the man that was responsible for putting together the hymn book that is used in the Norwegian Lutheran churches. And about, I would say, 100 of the hymns in that hymnal were written by Egil Hovland. He wrote some beautiful choral pieces. I've done a number of them over the years, and just a very wonderful and marvelous man. He wrote a piece for piano called In Memoriam, and it was in memoriam to the woman who had composed the words for the hymn that he wrote. It's kind of unusual because he is Norwegian, but this hymn writer that he used was Swedish. So this is a Swedish text, Jordens Gud, Sternes Herre. And I asked Catherine Altobello if she would sing a verse of the hymn, so you get a sense. It's not a hymn that is sung in this country, but you get a sense of it. And then I will play this piece, which is a set of the hymn and then four variations on the hymn. Catherine?
Oh.
For those of you who will be in the village next Tuesday, it, of course, being the eve of Bastille Day in France, and that would mean that by the time evening comes at Holden Village, it is already Bastille Day in France. Therefore, there will be a French musicale on Tuesday evening, which will involve, again, several special guests and a little mixture of music, of cabaret music, as well as French composers. And our special guest who next will appear again on Tuesday, Mr. Tom Ahlstrom. So last year he did a piece, but we thought we should find a different one to do this year, and I'll let him introduce it. That's part of the piece. But I do have to ask in advance, there are several sound effects that are called for. And since we are doing this with the piano version rather than the orchestra version, I would call on your help. Twice I would give a little cue, and we need to hear the whistling of birds in the forest. These are not crows. These are, you know, smaller birds, but something gentle, you know, right. Could I hear what that would sound like? Beautiful. Right. Thank you so much. That will come twice. Later, however, when I give a third signal, I need to hear the roar of the crowd. That's exactly what we need. So your part is two birds and a roar. Please welcome our narrator, Mr. Tom Ahlstrom.
The story of Ferdinand. Ferdinand the Bull. Text by Monroe Leaf. Music by Herbert Haufrecht. In Spain, most self-respecting young bulls want more than anything else to be picked to fight at the bullfights in the great arena. One day, five men came down from Madrid. That was the day that Ferdinand Well, this is the story of what happened to Ferdinand.
Moo.
Once upon a time, there was a little bull, and his name was Ferdinand. All the other little bulls he lived with would run and jump and butt their heads together. He liked to sit just quietly and smell the flowers. He had a favorite spot out in the pasture under a cork tree. It was his favorite tree, and he would sit in its shade all day and smell the flowers. Sometimes his mother, who was a cow, would worry about him. She was afraid he would be lonesome all by himself. Why don't you run and play with the other little bulls and skip and butt your head, she would say. But Ferdinand would shake his head. I just like it better here, where I can sit just quietly and smell the flowers. His mother saw that he was not lonesome, and because she was an understanding mother, even though she was a cow, she let him just sit there and be happy. As the years went by, Ferdinand grew and grew until he was very big and strong. All the other bulls he had grown up with in the same pasture would fight each other all day. They would butt each other, hit each other with their horns. What they wanted most of all was to be picked to fight at the bullfights in Madrid. But not Ferdinand. He still liked to sit just quietly under the cork tree and smell the flowers. One day, five men came in very funny hats to pick the biggest, fastest, roughest bull to fight in the bullfights in Madrid. All the other bulls ran around, snorting and butting, leaping and jumping, so the men would think they were very, very strong and pick them. Ferdinand knew that they wouldn't pick him, and he didn't care. So he went out of his to his favorite cork tree to sit down. He didn't look where he was sitting, and instead of sitting on the nice, cool grass in the shade, he sat on a bumblebee. Well, if you were a bumblebee and a bull sat on you, what would you do? You would sting him, and that is just what this bee did to Ferdinand. Whoa! Did it hurt? Ferdinand jumped up with a snort. He ran around puffing and snorting, butting and pawing the ground as if he were crazy. Five men saw him, and they all shouted with joy. Here was the largest and fiercest bull of all, just the one for the bullfights in Madrid. So they took him away for the bullfight day in a cart. Thank you. What a day it was. Flags were flying, bands were playing, and all the lovely ladies had flowers in their hair. They had a parade into the bull ring. First came the bandoleros with long, sharp pins with ribbons in them to stick in the bull and make him mad. Next came the picadores, who rode skinny horses, and they had long spears to stick in the bull and make him madder. Then came the matador, the proudest of all. Thought he was very handsome and bowed to the ladies. He had a red cape and a sword and was supposed to stick the bull last of all. Then came the bull. And you know who that was, don't you? Ferdinand. They called him Ferdinand the Fierce, and all the bandoleros were afraid of him. Moo! And the picadores were afraid of him. And the matador was scared stiff. Moo! Ferdinand ran to the middle of the ring, and everyone shouted and clapped because they thought he was going to fight fiercely and butt and snort and stick his horns around. But not Ferdinand. When he got to the middle of the ring, he saw the flowers in all the lovely ladies' hair, and he just sat down quietly and smelled. He wouldn't fight and be fierce, no matter what they did. He just sat and smelled. And the bandoleros were mad, and the picadores were madder, and the matador was so mad he cried because he couldn't show off his cape and sword. So they had to take Ferdinand home. And for all I know, he is sitting there still under his favorite cork tree, smelling the flowers just quietly. He is very happy.
On Tuesday will be a different one than that, of course. We wouldn't repeat Ferdinand. We have something else to offer. French, of course. So I'd like to close with a little piece some of you will know, The Melody, written by a man who was Australian by birth, but spent a great deal of his time in the United States. Fantastic pianist. He was the pianist that Grieg said played his, the Grieg piano concerto, better than anyone else. He was also extremely bizarre. His name was Percy Grainger. And among many things, which some of you may not know, he spent a year, in the late 40s, traveling with the band from Gustavus Adolphus College in Minnesota. And yes, it's true. He always tried to save money, so he wouldn't, for instance, send his clothes out, his tuxedo out to be pressed. He would instead put it between the mattresses of his bed. The problem was that he usually put it reverse so that when he got on stage, they were flapping rather than, you know, being this way. So the creases were on the sides. Yeah, not a good thing. But he wrote a great deal of piano music, and he, more than anyone in the 20th century, he was the one who just articulated every little thing he wanted. So he says at the beginning of this, the top notes louder and sharper than the rest, the left hand short, the right hand detached. Then you go on to the next page, and he says the lower voice of the right hand, in other words, you're playing two notes, so he's talking about the thumb and first finger part, the lower voice of the right hand slightly louder than the upper voice. Then bring out the lower voice, then very gently and smoothly, then you kind of go on for a while. Here it says violently, I'll do that. Then very sharp, the left hand to be violently wrenched, which I will do. Then we have more. Then we have loud and lots, and then we have very short, top note sharp, wrenched but short, no pedal, and then at the very end, detached and heavy, loud and steadily. Country Gardens.